Hello there, Peabody here. Once again, it is time to take another revealing peek back into history.
What famous date shall I set it to today, Mr. Peabody?
All the way back to 2008. Ruination, the early years.
Imagine walking into a family holiday party. And I am not talking about the curated, you know, picture-perfect gathering you see in a lifestyle catalog.
Well, definitely not the matching cashmere sweaters type of deal.
Right, exactly. No matching sweaters here. I mean, the kind of party where the spiked eggnog ran dry an hour ago, all the polite social filters have just completely evaporated, and everyone is sitting around the living room eagerly trading their absolute most embarrassing, unvarnished stories.
Yeah, the real messy stuff.
And somehow, despite the absolute chaos, it feels perfect. I'm King.
And I'm Gail.
You are tuning in to Ruination, the Early Years. To guide you through this deep dive into this specific month of broadcasting, we have pulled a massive stack of sources.
Yeah, from original December 2008 audio archives to preserved show notes.
Even old forum threads. We really wanted to reconstruct the beautiful, unfiltered reality of the Fat Cave. So we are dropping you right into a month where aggressive, festive cheer collides head-on with raw, unapologetic oversharing in the big, fatty online universe.
It's wild because December 2008 was such a fascinating historical moment. I mean, globally, you have this immense economic and cultural anxiety.
Oh, absolutely.
The financial crisis is dominating the news cycle, and social media is just starting to shift toward the, you know, highly curated, performative platforms we know today.
Right. The early days of pretending your life is perfect online.
Exactly. But diving into these audio files, you realize the Fat Cave operated as an entirely separate ecosystem. The focus wasn't on pretending everything was fine.
Not at all.
It was on establishing warmth and connection through highly unconventional, surprisingly tangible means.
Tangible is exactly the right word. It's what immediately jumps out from the show notes. Because today, we think of digital connection as a passive double tap on a photo.
Yeah, or leaving a quick comment on a holiday vlog or something.
But for Big Fatty and his listeners, the absolute ultimate currency of holiday connection was physical mail.
Yes, physical mail.
Reading through the December archives, there is a massive, almost obsessive emphasis on the Daily Mail tally.
He really treated the mail tally as a central narrative arc for the entire month. He wasn't casually mentioning that he received a few envelopes.
No, he's keeping score.
Right. He was actively tracking the volume, celebrating the days when he would hit up to 10 physical Christmas cards in a single delivery.
10 cards a day is wild.
And he made a point to open them live on the air, turning a solitary act into a broadcast event.
And looking at the specifics of what people were sending, it was rarely a standard winter wonderland scene. Like Princess Hannah sent a Chick-fil-A card featuring the cow saying, "Eat more chinkin."
Classic.
And the QCast Connection submitted this truly terrifying card where Dame Edna is depicted entirely as a Christmas tree.
Oh, that sounds horrifying.
It really does. Then you have Anthony out in California who clearly went all out, sending an elaborate physical pop-up Christmas stocking card.
But, I mean, the centerpiece of this entire physical mail phenomenon, heavily documented in the mid-month show notes, was a package from Mr. Bill in Laguna Beach.
Oh, man, the package.
Yeah, he sent a small plastic toy called a super-duper reindeer pooper.
Sifting through these old audio files and listening to the exact moment he opens that package is just, it's surreal. It's literally a plastic reindeer that when you squeeze it, dispenses brown jelly beans from its backside.
I mean, you can't make this stuff up. And Big Fatty describes every single detail of this interaction right into the microphone.
I actually have a theory about this, because from a pure broadcasting standpoint, this should be a disaster.
How so?
Well, describing a plastic pooping reindeer or a shiny foil-lined envelope or the mechanics of a pop-up stocking on a strictly audio-only medium shouldn't work. Audio is designed for conversation, not for showcasing visual gag gifts.
That's a good point, yeah.
But listening to the tapes, it functions as a remarkably effective early version of an auditory unboxing video.
Oh, an auditory unboxing video. I love that.
Right. When you hear the physical ripping of the paper and the sheer delight in his voice over those brown jelly beans, it places you right there on the floor of the Fat Cave. You're sharing that exact moment of discovery with him.
An auditory unboxing is exactly the right framework. And the psychology behind why it works is really rooted in sensory validation.
Yeah.
By broadcasting the tactile details, you know, the crinkle of the wrapping paper, the description of the foil, the snapping sound of a pop-up card, He bridges the physical distance between his studio and the listener's life.
He's making it real.
Exactly. He is proving that the audience's physical presence, manifested through that card or that ridiculous reindeer, has successfully penetrated his real physical world. Earning a spot on that physical card list wasn't just a fun shout out.
It was like a badge of honor.
Right, proving you existed in the community.
But, I mean, physical mail proved listeners existed in the real world, sure. But getting a card read on air was really just surface-level participation. The real lifeblood of the Fat Cave's holiday season came from the emotional vulnerability listeners were willing to offer up.
Oh, the contest.
Yes. And Big Fatty extracted that vulnerability through the Soy Candles by Phoebes holiday story contest.
The prompt was so simple. Send in your memorable holiday stories. And the community's response, preserved in these audio submissions, is just a collection of deeply unvarnished, hilarious, and universally relatable moments.
My favorite is Nancy in Japan. She submitted a story that plays like a perfect mid-century comedy. She called in to recount a disastrous Thanksgiving back in 1963, set in Rio de Janeiro.
Oh yeah, her father brought home a total surprise guest for the holiday dinner.
Right, a 23-year-old, fair, freckled British Royal Navy lieutenant.
The lieutenant who arrived in his white uniform, but crucially, wearing shorts.
Yes.
Nancy specifically points out that U.S. Navy men absolutely did not wear shorts to formal dinners back then.
She was completely fascinated by it. She spent the entire dinner deliberately dropping her napkin onto the floor just so she had an excuse to duck under the table and check out his legs.
That is so funny.
And the punchline of this story is fantastic. Her dad, trying to be hospitable, suggests taking this fair, freckled British lieutenant to the beach in the blistering 30 degrees Celsius heat.
That's just a terrible idea.
Terrible. Nancy, with absolute brutal practicality, points out he'd just get terribly sunburned and effectively damage British Royal Navy property.
I love that she framed it as damaging Navy property.
It is such a vivid memory to hold on to for 45 years.
It survives in her memory because of how beautifully awkward it was. And the same authenticity applies to the submission from Tom the Ramble Redhead, though his story strikes a much sweeter, deeply nostalgic chord.
Right, the cookies.
He recounted memories of his grandmother, who had 10 kids over 20 years, resulting in this massive extended family. Tom detailed how she would painstakingly bake cookies for all 20 of her grandchildren.
Unbelievable.
And she would carefully write every single one of their names in icing.
The detail that completely stops you in your tracks when you hear the tape is that she executed all of this intricate cookie decorating before aerosol icing was even invented.
No cans of easy spray icing.
Nothing. The sheer manual labor of love involved in hand-piting 20 personalized cookies is staggering.
It really grounds the holiday in tangible effort. But, you know, while Nancy and Tom looked back at the past, Scott from D.C. submitted a story about the future.
Oh, Scott.
He didn't offer a memory. He offered preemptive dread.
The nightmare in Woodland Hills. Scott is staring down the barrel of an upcoming holiday trip to stay with friends in California, and he is already dreading every single second of it.
It sounds awful.
These friends have a house they constantly boast about, but Scott reveals their refrigerator has been completely broken for months.
The door is literally sitting detached on the kitchen floor.
Just sitting there.
And beyond the appliance disaster, he anticipates the true horror of the trip. Being forced to sit in this broken-down luxury house while his friends make him watch hours of incredibly mundane video footage from their recent cruise.
Hours of it.
He knows they are going to narrate every single path they walked and every random tree they passed.
It is the ultimate holiday hostage situation. The universal fear of being a captive audience to someone else's aggressively boring vacation.
So relatable.
Tim from the podcast, Tim Call an Ambulance, ends up officially winning the contest and the soy candles. But looking at the collective submissions, from sunburned lieutenants to broken refrigerators, it begs the question of why a community bonds so tightly over these specific types of messy narratives.
Well, these aren't just anecdotes. They are the manifestation of what the BFO universe refers to as mental warts.
Ah, mental warts.
It's a concept we've touched on when looking at other months of this deep dive, but it perfectly explains the gravity of December 2008. Society, especially during the holidays, pressures people to hide their mental warts. You know, those unfiltered, unpolished, slightly embarrassing thoughts or anxieties.
Right, you're supposed to smile and pretend everything is great.
Exactly, but by actively soliciting these dread-filled, awkward stories, the show constructs a digital chosen family that bans the expectation of perfection.
And the host has to set the standard for that imperfection, right?
Yeah.
Big Fatty doesn't just sit back and demand his listeners expose their messy lives. He leads the charge.
Oh, he definitely does.
In the middle of all this, he provides the recipe for Big Fatty's sausage balls. Let me read you this recipe from the show notes because it is the furthest thing from a delicate, artisanal, culinary creation.
Let's hear it.
You take 1 pound of lot raw sausage, 1 pound of medium grated cheddar cheese, a dash of Worcestershire sauce, and exactly 3 cups of Bisquick. You mix it all by hand, roll it into balls, and bake it at 375 degrees. It is heavy, it is greasy, and honestly, it sounds glorious.
It does sound good. Contrast that recipe with the aspirational food blogs that were really gaining traction in 2008. He is offering dense, unpretentious comfort food.
Very dense.
And he pairs that culinary transparency with absolute bluntness about his own physical realities. He openly discusses his heavy holiday drinking, digging into the wine and the holiday nog, and he freely broadcasts his severe gastrointestinal distress to his entire global audience.
Oh, man.
He literally tells them he is blowing it out both ends.
I have to admit, reading that in the archives is jarring. Most broadcasters would edit that out entirely.
Oh, without a doubt.
But the strategy behind leaving it in is incredibly effective. By sharing the burnt sausage balls and the bathroom disasters, he grants his entire audience absolute permission to be flawed.
Yeah.
He is signaling to the listener, look at the state of my life. I'm a mess. My stomach is a wreck. My diet is terrible. Whatever mess you are bringing to the holidays this year, you don't have to hide it here.
It establishes an impenetrable foundation of trust. If he only presented a flawless, sanitized holiday experience, listeners like Scott wouldn't feel safe confessing their anxiety about the Woodland Hills trip.
Right. They'd keep it to themselves.
That deep, unvarnished intimacy is what allowed the BFO to expand beyond a single diary and function as the center of a much wider digital neighborhood.
You know, looking at how this digital neighborhood operates, I initially found it confusing. A solo daily journal podcast only has about 20 minutes to work with, yet the archives show Big Fatty spending massive chunks of time talking about entirely different podcaster.
Yeah, the expanded universe.
We get a prominent check-in with Omar, known in the network as the Other O.
Omar had recently relocated from Atlanta to Chicago, and his appearances inject this vivid, freezing reality into the December broadcasts. He talks at length about the physical shock of the freezing weather and the snow.
He details these hyper-specific logistical changes that completely reframe his daily routine. He explains how, back in Atlanta, he used to buy beer in heavy glass bottles because you just carry them from the store straight to your car trunk.
Right, easy.
But in Chicago, he is forced to carry his groceries for blocks through the freezing wind on public transit. Because of that, he entirely switches to buying Miller Lite in cans, simply because they are lighter to carry.
Those tiny, mundane details of daily survival, like switching from bottles to cans to survive a commute, make the broadcast feel incredibly lived in.
It really does.
But the most memorable moment of Omar's December appearances is a stunning realization he makes about his own show. For over 300 episodes of his own podcast, Omar had been signing off with the phrase, abrazos y besitos.
And he had absolutely no idea what it meant.
No clue.
For 300 shows, he just said it. He finally learns, live on the air, that it translates to hugs and little kisses. This fantastic moment of public vulnerability.
And it contrasts sharply with the other major network check-in. This spectacular ongoing feud with Auntie Vera, also known as the Sea Hag.
The Sea Hag drama reads like early reality television. Auntie Vera goes on a holiday cruise, which Big Fatty immediately dubs the Golden Showers Princess.
Naturally.
He doesn't just mention her vacation. He reports a highly specific, totally unverified rumor to his listeners. He claims Auntie Vera got heavily intoxicated on the ship, suffered a massive colonic episode, and created such a devastating calamity that the cruise line actually had to repaint the ship's deck furniture.
It is a phenomenal piece of manufactured drama. And interspersed with these wild feuds, you have listeners calling in with jarring, hyper-local time capsule updates.
Like what?
Like Jeremiah in Mississippi calling in with a completely earnest economic report, noting that gas prices had plummeted to $1.12 a gallon at the local Buff Sugar Shack.
$1.12. I was trying to figure out why a diarist would spend so much time on Omar's commute, Auntie Vera's cruise ship disasters, and Jeremiah's gas prices. It almost feels like a defense mechanism, a way for Big Fatty to distract the audience from himself.
It might look like a distraction, but it's actually community architecture.
Uh-huh.
In 2008, podcasts didn't have algorithmic discovery feeds pushing content to new users. You had to actively seek out new shows.
Right. It was all word of mouth.
By dedicating airtime to Annie Vera's feuds or checking in on Omar's transition to Miller Lite cans, the BFO is actively cross-pollinating audiences. He is creating a shared universe of inside jokes and a sprawling cast of characters. It transforms the experience from listening to a lonely audio diary into eavesdropping on a bustling, interconnected digital town.
You aren't just an audience member, you're a neighbor at a block party. And speaking of the history of this neighborhood, the December archives conclude with the ultimate blast from the past returning to the Fat Cave.
Oh, the reunion.
For Christmas week, the audience gets a massive surprise reunion.
Big Fatty reunites with his original co-host, Larry H. Vader, to temporarily revive their old show, the Little Fatty Cast.
The LFC. And let me tell you, tracing this reunion through the audio files, it is an absolute endearing, glorious mess.
It really is.
It is the exact antithesis of a slick, highly produced holiday special. They attempt to capture that old magic, but the physical reality of time passing slaps them right in the face. Big Fatty tries to plug in their legendary old soundboard, only to discover that the physical cord has completely rusted out because of the persistent humidity in the Fat Cave.
That rusted cord is the perfect tangible metaphor for attempting to go back in time. You can't just plug the past back in and expect crisp audio.
Not at all.
Because they clearly haven't planned new segments to compensate for the technical failure, the content of the reunion devolves into total chaos. They end up playing random, completely outdated voice letters from a full year prior.
And then they try to play a pop culture trivia game called Dead or Alive, where they have to guess the current vital status of obscure celebrities.
How does that go?
They fail at it spectacularly. They try to figure out the status of Gene the Dancing Machine from The Gong Show, and neither of them has the slightest clue if he's alive, dead, or what he's been doing for the last three decades. It is a broadcast train wreck.
Amidst all this scattered energy, Big Fatty details a recent holiday trip he took to Universal Studios and Disney's Epcot with Larry Clyde. His review of the theme parks is wonderfully petty and specific.
Oh, very specific.
He heavily critiques the staff service at Universal, claiming it was severely lacking, and contrasts it sharply with the magical, pristine Ice Palace environment created at the Magic Kingdom.
You know, listening to this chaotic reunion with Larry H. Vader, I kept thinking about pulling a beloved old winter coat out of the back of the closet when the first snow hits.
Okay, I like this analogy.
You put it on and you immediately realize there is a hole in the pocket. And the zipper is completely rusted shut, exactly like that soundboard cord. It is objectively broken. But the instant warmth it provides and the familiar, comfortable way it wraps around your shoulders makes it absolutely perfect. You don't care about the broken zipper because the feeling of wearing it is exactly what you needed to survive the cold. That has to be exactly what hearing Larry H. Vader's voice felt like for this audience.
The audience wasn't tuning in for pristine audio quality or a tightly formatted trivia game. They tuned in for the comfort of a familiar dynamic. The rusted soundboard didn't ruin the LFC reunion. Overcoming the rusted soundboard was the reunion.
When we step back and look at the entirety of December 2008 on the BFO, what really stands out is the total unapologetic rejection of holiday perfection.
Completely.
They weren't trying to create a seamless, sanitized special. The warmth was generated through sharing heavy Bisquick recipes, wrestling with rusted equipment, and fostering unfiltered human connection. It was about opening the doors and letting people bring their sunburned lieutenants and broken refrigerators to the party and celebrating those messes rather than hiding them.
It proves that vulnerability and a willingness to be unpolished are the ultimate foundations for genuine connection.
It leaves us with something really crucial to consider, especially given where media is heading today. We are rapidly entering an era dominated by flawless AI-generated content, hyper-curated virtual influencers, and algorithms designed to show us only the most aesthetically pleasing versions of reality.
It's all so polished now.
As everything around us becomes artificially perfect, maybe the only surefire way to prove we are actually human and to build communities that actually last is to broadcast our mistakes. Maybe the future of connection relies entirely on showing the world our rusted soundboards and our mental warts.
It's a powerful reminder that our flaws are what make us real to each other.
Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive into the archives. Please remember to tune in each Sunday for Ruination Repeat, which recaps last week's current BFO episodes.
And we invite you to come back next Saturday for another month of Ruination, the early years.
I'm King.
And I'm Gail.
See you next time.
Well, we hope you enjoyed today's trip down memory lane on Ruination the Early Years. Join us again next weekend. We'll see you then.